mattering when we say
Black Lives Matter.
A star in my vast sea, I opened my eyes to take a peek, to find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. Just then, when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love, then when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love. Histories of ages past, unenlightened shadows cast down through all eternity, the crying of humanity. Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love, then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hurdy Gurdy Songs. This is episode 146, and it's taking place 3 days after 9/11. The events around the remembrance and the commemoration of those events of that day, 20 years ago, shocking as it may seem, that's a long time ago. An entire generation has now grown up. And let's hope that this is an opportunity to reflect once again and respect, yes, the loss of lives, the damage done to our city, to the United States, and also that we have an opportunity to reflect a little bit on some of the songs, the musical response that is to the events of 9/11, also through space and time. I'm very happy to have you join us. We thank you for joining us every week here on Hurdy Gurdy Songs. And I'm going to get right to the music with a couple of Hurdy Gurdy songwriters that I feel are some of the strongest reactions. Some very immediately, very soon after the events of 9/11. And so I hope that despite the somberness of the theme and the respect with which we recognize the importance of that historical moment, I think these songs really do capture some of the hurdy-gurdy truth of the experience.
So I started out on High Street, had to travel into town, like some Orpheus descending through a turnstile underground, from Brooklyn Heights into Manhattan. Where I had to be. Now you have to
The first stop was Broadway, Nassau. A few more passengers got in. We all sat, no one was standing. There's somewhere we'd never been. They say heaven's high above us, and hell is far below. But inside that subway tunnel, there was no sure way to know. Chambers Street, a closed ghost station. Passing through, we seem to glide like prisoners inside compartments on some house of horrors ride. The walls were tiled, I hadn't noticed. They seem so antiseptic, clean. But we knew what we were under. The lights were on, that seemed obscene. And there I saw the three initials, W, T, and then C. I'd survived somehow, was living, but somewhere I shouldn't be. At the next stop, the doors opened, and I emerged up above ground. I was in another country. Elysian Fields, no Chinatown. They say heaven's high above us, and hell's somewhere below. Standing on Canal Street, there was no sure way to know. They say heaven's high above us, and hell's not far below. Standing on Canal Street, there was no sure way to go.
York had her heart broke. New York had her heart broke. And I was there that day, and I don't know what to say, except New York had her heart. F-16s over Central Park when New York had her heart broke. We were dazed in the streets from the blood and dust and heat when New York had her heart broke. New York had her heart broke. And the world changed that day, forever some will say, when New York had her heart broke. In a million years, she couldn't cry more tears. New York had her heart broke. New York had her heart broke. Ah, but she will rise again.
There you have Mr. John Hiatt with When New York Had Her Heart Broke from Dirty Jeans and Mudslide Hymns. And before that, we did open up with a kind of a mosh of Loudon Wainwright III and John Hiatt, but then we cleared that up. My apologies. It's been a very disconcerting few days. In any case, one of the reasons I wanted to do today's program, not strictly a commemorative kind of program, but something that is very much active and dynamic with this theme of what happens to a country when it goes through these kinds of transformations and these kinds of experiences, horrific as they may be, they do change us in many profound ways. And I came across an article from a friend of mine who wrote a piece really around the 10th anniversary of 9/11 that struck me, and I wanted to invite him to join me today. This is Dr. Thomas Connor, who I will introduce here, and talk a little bit about this article that he wrote 10 years ago. But let me just introduce him by letting you know that he's a newly minted doctor of communications and science studies at UC San Diego. And he's a researcher that examines interactions with holograms, spectator interactions. And he's been a journalist for more than 20 years. He's a music critic and editor, one of the most knowledgeable music critics that I know. And he was most recently at the Chicago Sun-Times. And I know him from way back when, around the turn of the century, when he worked at the Woody Guthrie Archives on a National Arts Journalism Program fellowship. So first, I'd like to welcome Tom. Tom, are you there?
I'm here, yes. Thank you, Jorge. It's wonderful to be with you in any form, real or virtual.
Yeah, it's been I guess about 7 or 8 years since the last time I saw you in New York, and yeah. It's so nice to hear you, and thank you for joining me today. What I wanted to start with really is you wrote this article September 12, 2001 is when it was published, and it was very much, the title was U.S. Musical Response to 9/11, All About the Country. And First of all, can you set it up? What prompted you to write this article at the 10th anniversary? What were you thinking when you wanted to write this piece?
Well, I was the music critic at the Sun-Times in Chicago at the time. You know, when these kind of anniversaries roll around, a newspaper or some sort of publication like that, I'm sure my editors were all, you know, what are we going to do about the 10th anniversary? What can we say? That sort of thing. And everybody kind of pitches it. I wrote a piece about music. I'm sure Ebert wrote something about movies. I'm sure our television person wrote something about television. And this was me just, you know, sort of coming up with some kind of retrospective of, you know, has there been any good protest music or socially conscious music about this particular event in those previous 10 years.
Do you feel that in those first 10 years there was a variety of production in terms of like the genres? In other words, were the country people doing it? Were the folk rockers doing it? Who was writing songs about 9/11?
Well, as I talk about in the article, most of what happened in the beginning, in my experience, was country. And that has largely to do with where I was working at the time, because in 2001, I was in Oklahoma. And then I got to Chicago at the Sun-Times in 2005. And so still somewhat in the Midwest, but, you know, hearing a lot of that sort of, you know, Midwest vibe going on. Country music was first on the bandwagon because, you know, that's where you get a lot of, you know, rah-rah, patriotic, even jingoistic kind of stuff happens mostly. And I think other people, other genres were, I don't know, they were certainly slower to respond, maybe. I say that even though, you know, you had Neil Young come out pretty quickly, just like he's wont to do ever since Ohio. I think McCartney's song came out pretty quickly, but very different takes on it, very different, you know, perspectives on how to make meanings out of this event.
When you mentioned McCartney and Neil Young as the rockers of the time, that, you know, I think you put it as somewhat a rock centric list in which you you talk about, you know, other artists that were not rock centric, you know, Charlie Daniels, Randy Travis, you know, Faith Hill, not least of which Hank Williams Jr. This kind of jingoistic songwriting, you included these in here. And is there one from this list that you would like to play and comment further upon?
Oh, from the list that I made?
Yes.
You played the Loudon Wainwright, which is a favorite, and I mean I'm a huge Loudon Wainwright fan anyway, but it's such a great song and mentions Brooklyn Heights, so good for the show. but you know, yeah, when
Brooklyn,
I interviewed him and he talks about, you know, he said something about, you know, when you face something that gigantic, you think I can't even think about writing a song about this; it would be too ridiculous. But then he like all of the ones on this list, he kind of found a middle way, right? Like you could, when you come up with a song like this, you could go either way with it. You could go, you know, mm-hmm. towards the, you know, completely maudlin or the, or the venting your rage kind of thing. And most of the songs that I like, that I put on this list, they all find some middle way through that binary. The Springsteen, I think, is great. You know, Springsteen is the single named man that he is because he can, you know, spin gold from this kind of national sentiment and not, you know, sort of swing either way. I think The Rising is a tremendous song.
Okay, well, we'll get to that, but let's, I kind of want to give, like, you know, the equal time to the jingoistic. So I want to play a little bit of Only in America from Brooks and Dunn, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Traffic jam, staring at the faces in a rearview mirror, looking at the promise of the promised land. One kid dreams of fame and fortune, one kid helps pay.
Together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
Now, Tom, Ministry's Lies, 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 following closely on the heels of that Only in America. Lies, Lies, Lies was on your list, and can you tell us a little bit about why you included that at the 10-year mark? And the follow-up question is, like, would that be applicable at the 20-year mark? We'll deal with the future later. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure it's applicable to some people. It's full of, you know, nutty conspiracy theories, and, you know, those have certainly taken on new flavors in the last 10 years. And, you know, yeah, like I don't want to necessarily hear the conspiracy theories, but I do sort of support I guess sort of the spirit from which he's coming at. He's trying to find somebody to target for this, and he's basically saying that the rich people did it or something like that. I don't know. It's nuts. It's an interesting way to follow Brooks and Dunn, that's for sure.
Well, the contrast is stark, and I think the story is stark. And it was absolutely, we do live in some very dark times. You know, when you compound, in addition to this 20th anniversary of this tragedy with the COVID, the ongoing pandemic issues, and the climate issues, it's like we have a compounded culture now of tragedy. And so I think what I'm trying to get to with some of these songs, including from your list, another one that was on your list that I thought was just fantastic, was James's Hey Ma. Can we play a little bit and talk about that? And I'm going to follow that up with one that was not on your list. Actually, it appears on I believe it's a Grammys list. I like to juxtapose these together to kind of spur on our conversation. So here's Hey Ma from James.
Now the towers have fallen, so much dust in the air. It affected your vision, couldn't see yourself clear. From the fall came such choices, even worse than the fall. There's this chain of consequences within, without. Action calls and reaction never follows to plan. Black swans on your picnic table, knocking over the jam. Please don't preach me forgiveness, you're hardwired for revenge. War is just about business, without. Dead live on within us, keep your fingers crossed. We were choking on the smoke and the dust and the lives that were lost. Scratch the surface of liberals, there's a beast underneath. Others hide in their jackals within. Without.
Hey Ma, the boys in body bags coming home in pieces. Hey Ma, the boys in body bags coming home in pieces.
Whoa.
mom must find a place. Give me time, give me space. Give me real, don't give me fake. Give me strength, reserve control. Give me heart and give me soul. Give me time, give us a kiss. Tell me you're in politics.
Dr. Thomas Connor, you have always been really a very informed kind of cultural critic, and particularly in popular music and culture. And I wanted to ask you, what's your reaction to this? I mean, here, you know, two very much pop bands, you know, Coldplay and James, and certainly popular culture taking on this particular kind of theme of body bags and lies, and what's your thoughts on popular culture and actually being able to address some of the ideas in or rather from an event like 9/11?
Well, it's first I want to ask, did you play politics because it has a 9/11 relationship?
Yes.
I wasn't even aware of that. I love that album, but I didn't realize that it was a 9/11 connection. That's interesting.
That's why I wanted to pair with James, because this is popular, you know, pop music. Pop rock.
Yeah, and James, so underappreciated. That's such an amazing song.
Yes.
The way that strum and guitar builds, and you know, in this way to be uplifting while also being pretty pissed off. And yeah, the descriptors there, and the rich language about body bags being such a symbol of this kind of war and tragedy. I teach a class called Music as Social Action, mm-hmm. in which we basically do a historical survey from about Woody Guthrie on up to about Occupy, and pull out, you know, all the different kinds of protest music and propaganda music and, you know, things that are labeled socially conscious, and really try to study the discourses about how, you know, especially from the baby boomer age, about how, you know, music's going to change the world. And we try to look at it from the point of, well, okay, no, a song is not going to change the world, but a song does change the world in, you know, the way that it circulates discourses in certain ways, gets them into places that that those discourses might not get to otherwise. I have a lot of fun playing them things from like the early 80s. I love playing them the Style Council, for instance, because first I'll give them a lyric sheet, you know, and they'll read the lyrics of something from like the Style Council's The Lodgers or something. And I say, okay, what do you expect that song is going to sound like? And they're all like, oh yeah, this has got to be a punk song. It's really angry and crazy. And then I play in the video where, you know, Paul Weller's got a sweater tied around his neck and, you know, DC Lee's in the Gingham Dorothy outfit and they're skipping around and all this kind of stuff. And the kids are like, what is happening? but it's to talk about, you know, well, right. Because this angry sentiment of the lyrics, if it were in a punk song, would only get to certain audiences that listen to punk music. If you take that same message, and what a lot of people in the early 80s were trying to do is to dress it up and play the game and get it into some commercial pop, then you might have some of the, you know, political awakening that happened back then.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think Style Council, great to mention Style Councils, and in the terms of like Coldplay, that particular tune, Politic, it is a subtle reference to being wounded and being hurt tragically and its impact on how you actually will establish your politic or your political ideology or what you believe in terms of like the government and how you respond to the government. And so that back to back with James, I think it's just opens up this question of why a genre like country music, where you have Alan Jackson, Where Were You, right? Classic, you know, right. Song of the period. And then you have Fleetwood Mac, the rock response. Let's listen to a little bit of each of those. And get some of your thoughts on that kind of like, both contradiction, but also kind of like, it's all woven together because it is music and it is this mass mediated form of cultural production. So let's start with Alan Jackson.
Turning on that September day, were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in LA? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue, and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer, and look at yourself and what really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I.
Illuminate, there's a candle that I burn. It's dancing.
course, the great Stevie Nicks with Fleetwood Mac, Illume, preceded by Where Were You by Alan Jackson. Your thoughts, Tom?
Say again, I'm sorry.
Your thoughts on that, juxtaposition of the of Alan Jackson, which I think is struck me as being rather neutral in many ways about the events, whereas Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks' words seem to be much more overtly highlighting the darkness of the event, kind of like, you right. know, a very different reaction. And I know Fleetwood Mac, that song was on your list. And any thoughts on that kind of juxtaposition of those two kinds of songs? If you were going to do, let's say, a media analysis of those two.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it back to back like that. And I think you're right. I love the Fleetwood Mac song. It's that kind of rhythmic tone poem. Mm-hmm. And it's a song that I enjoyed for a while before I even clued in that it was a 9/11 song, because I don't think the original pressing had that as part of the song title. And if you listen to, or if you read the words, I'm not sure there's anything directly about 9/11 or the towers or anything like that, but it takes this wonderfully kind of maternal point of view. She's caring for loved ones who've been through this trauma and that sort of thing. The Alan Jackson song, you know, I haven't listened to that Alan Jackson song in a while, and now I really want to teach my class again and play that for them, because it's a wonderful example of this kind of performance of social norms. The whole, he does this sort of Walt Whitman thing in the lyrics where he sort of repeats the same sort of thing, and where it's the question, did you do this? Did you do this? And the answer, the blank that's filled in there is always something that a right-thinking American should have done.
Right.
And it's this kind of social maintenance kind of thing. And I love also how I heard him say, I'm just a singer. I'm not this political man. Which is funny to hear from people in those kind of positions when, we always hear actors and celebrities, somehow being put in that position by other elements of society who are like, why should I listen to you about politics? You're just an actor. Shut up.
But it's interesting, Tom. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's interesting because the line that follows there is that he believes in Jesus, and that's kind of where I faded out. Both personally and culturally speaking, but that's the other element of this, this survivor thing that Stevie Nicks talks about: trauma, the shadow of a stranger, and religion, the role that religion, faith, plays into this entire reaction and responses that artists have. And the words are sometimes not directly about, as you well know, the words are not always directly about the thing that they're trying to say, but they're actually about the meaning of what they're saying. So I think
sometimes the song is not even about it.
Right.
Sometimes the song itself, like the Brooks and Dunn song earlier, the one that you played called Only America, that was not written about 9/11. That actually came out several weeks before 9/11. And it was grabbed because of its title on
right.
It. It has this, rousing chorus about dreaming big. And that's something that really interests me as a scholar, as a communication scholar. These instances of grabbing existing culture and using it to explain or make sense of a historical moment like this, before any new culture has been created for that very purpose. Like in those days following something like 9/11, before the songwriters could knock something out directly related to these attacks, we needed to process what was happening. And it's a phenomenological thing. You make new sense of reality by drawing on and combining what you've already experienced. And culture works in some of the same ways. We don't have new art yet to shape our meaning making, but we have to use something because that's what humans do. So we grab at what's at hand. I think that's why a lot of country music was grabbed, because, you know, heaven knows this country has plenty of patriotic music lying around. So we got a lot of that on, you know, September 12th.
What I'd like to do, that's great, Tom. That's really great. What I'd like to do is I'd like to shift a little bit into more recent, a more recent recording, and then kind of follow that up with a little taste of course, it'll be very obvious, and then get your response to that if you will stick around with us a little bit longer, please.
Sure.
Okay, great. Here we go. I'm actually going to play a short piece from Lil Panda, going into Heem's a track called Flag Shopping.
Rap, baby.
And don't drop steep as does my weed. I never suck, cause the suck is the gamer of BuzzFeed. Beyond the walls of news, life is
redefined.
I think I'm being dank when I'm in a 9/11 state of mind. Hope the breed got some creed. My re don't like no dirty speed. Run up to the feed and get the lead in a 9/11 state of mind. What more could you ask for? The YOLO doge, you gotta complain about the cringe, and I gotta love it though. Somebody's built beaks for the droge, and that's me. Rapping to the big wig, I'm rapping to move your pig. Dank swag, awesome sauce, like a go. Boy, I tell you, I thought you were a mo. I can't take the cringe, I gotta take the minion. I try to spit it, I guess I got no territorial domination. I'm rapping to the pig in a 9/11 state of mind. When I was a young gamer, my head had a domination. I was kicked out with no opinion. I never thought I'd see that opinion. Ain't a soul left I could take my gamer opinion. I was kicking PC quite in the tree.
Yeah, we're going flag shopping. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Yeah. We're going flag shopping for American flags. They're staring at our turbans, they're calling them rags. They're calling them towels, they're calling them diapers. They're more like crowns, let's strike them like vipers. I know why they mad, but why call us Arabs? We sad like they sad, but now we buy they flags. Spying on our Muslim brother while staring at our mother. Lover, they some bad motherfuckers. We're going flag shopping, we're going flag shopping. The kids are throwing stones and we complain, but they ain't stopping. On your way to the top, and now they want you to stop. Your mama pray to God, but your dad'll lose his job. Your dad mad, cause he lost all clients. Dad, why you crying? I thought that we had the spirit of the lion. He take it out on you, his belt big like Orion's. The NSA be spying. We're going American flag shopping. Red, white, blue on our crib. The neighbors threw rocks at the house. They making it harder to live. They want a shorter version. They want a nickname. They want a Tobias like we Kunta Kinte. They want a shorter version. They want a nickname. They want a Tobias like we Kunta Kinte. Federal agents tap my mobile phone and use drones.
There's Heem's from a Punjabi American, very active with his own group called Das Racist. And yeah, there's yet another take on the results. And what I'd like to do really quickly, if I may, is kind of a stretch, Tom, with our listeners. I'd like to just read from a recent piece by Steve Cole in The New Yorker. He ends this op-ed talking about really the impact of all these wars we've had as a result of 9/11, Afghanistan, Iraq. It says, quote, "For both moral and practical reasons, the United States has caused to provide substantial humanitarian aid to troubled nations and even a supporting role to strengthen their security, perhaps having fashioned a foreign policy, if it is not too much to hope, informed by a measure of humility and a capacity for self-reflection." Now, these songwriters, all of these songwriters, I mean, everyone from Fleetwood Mac to Coldplay to Alan Jackson, these are highly reflective artists, to different degrees, of course. And when we listen to a song like Flag Shopping and Middle School Vocab from Little Panda, which talks about this 9/11 state of mind, what are your thoughts on this kind of communication? What is it actually conveying?
Well, I love the theme song because it takes something that you see. I mean, you see a title like Flag Shopping, and there's maybe a dominant way to read that, right? Oh, flag shopping. You're going to put up a flag up because you're a good American, and that's what good Americans do. They display that. But reading some of the lyrics of that song, you realize that what they're doing, they're going flag shopping. He's turned it around into, this is a survival thing for us. We have to put up this flag. We have to display this, this hegemony in this certain way in order to not get, he talks about neighbors are throwing rocks at the house. People are calling him all sorts of names because they don't think they're American. So he has to go buy a flag.
Right.
In order to try not to get rocks thrown at the house. I mean, it's pretty stunning.
It is stunning, and the question, the notion of patriotism is really called into question. What is it? What is a real patriot? Especially right. As a result of this an entire generation that is removed from the event and just have it kind of a historical. Now it's now history. I can't thank you enough, Thomas, Dr. Thomas Connor, for joining me today. Do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to share or any particular track that you'd like to go out on? I, of course, have the boss lined up here. But
you go to it. I'm thrilled to be here with you. Always glad to talk to you and to talk about interesting things like this.
One last thing I would like to ask you. What do you think Woody Guthrie would have written a 9/11 song?
Oh, he would have had one written by noon, don't you think?
I agree. I totally agree with you, Dr. Thomas.
I mean, especially later in his life, that's what he did. He watched the news and wrote songs about it. And, yeah, he would have been, depending on where he was. I mean, if he was, still living down on Mermaid Avenue at the time, watching the smoke from his house, that would have been inspirational in a certain way.
Thank you for that insight. It's almost graphic. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Thomas Connor. Until next time, we're going to go out with a little bit of The Boss. And again, thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile of line.